do you picture when you think of mobility in the cities of the future? Do you imagine buildings and green space together with beautifully designed skyscrapers and flying cars threading seamlessly between them? Pedestrians safely sharing space with micromobility, electric and autonomous cars. How does this all fit into your vision of a future city? But with uncertainties presented by issues like climate change and pandemics, how do we ensure a bright future for our cities? What needs to be decided and taken into account? What problems should we tackle first? For this Future Car Expert episode, I've combined conversations with past guests that have a variety of backgrounds. They share their vision for the future and how they think it can be achieved through innovative design inspired by trends and human behavior. First, you'll hear architect and urban designer Catherine Firth talk about creating cities that prioritize pedestrians and cyclists and how we need to coordinate a city's infrastructure to accommodate this. Catherine doubled down on the importance of creating sustainable transport alternatives and how a city can be designed to encourage this.
At the end of the day, we have better cities when we prioritize pedestrians and cyclists. They become safer cities, they become more welcoming. It's better as well, although some businesses would complain because you can't drive up to the door. There's so much that businesses benefit from footfall. I mean, it's a lot easier when you're walking past a shop to stop and pop inside than to, you know, find a parking space and pop inside, even if the, you know, the sign caught your eye. So, I mean, I think in the end, you know, everybody wins, and there might be some, you know, behavioral change that people have to get used to as we sort of reduce the amount of private vehicles on the road. But I think that's okay. I mean, whatever it was, you know, 20 years ago, nobody thought about recycling anything. And guess what? We all do it now. So I'm a great believer that then you can teach old and young dogs new tricks.
So by mode of transport, then, it sounds like the pedestrians at the top, the car is at the bottom. And then there's a multitude of vehicles in between, right? Be shared transportation, Ubers, scooters. Do you see a hierarchy there?
I do. I mean, I think the pedestrian really does need to take priority, but there's obviously a limit to how far pedestrians can walk without at some point having to turn to some other mode. And it would be, you know, unfair to expect that everyone can get on a bike or that everyone's going to feel safe on a bike. I would argue that the more we make places pedestrian and cycle priority, the more cyclists will attract. But we do need other modes. And I think that is where, as you say, the shared vehicle, which is where I think perhaps we're headed, an autonomous vehicle. What I would like to do is let's prioritize the autonomous vehicle that in a sense is perhaps replacing a bus rather than the autonomous vehicle that's replacing an Uber or Lyft that has one or two passengers in it.
So is the goal to just get cars off the road? There has to be a higher goal, right? It might be sustainability or it might be accessibility, regardless of your ability to afford transportation. What's the end goal of this? It's not really just to get rid of cars, right?
No, I mean, the cars are more what has shaped much of our contemporary urban form. And although, you know, especially here in Boston, we have a lot of urban form that predates the car when it was back in horse and carts, you know, in the end, there was a, you know, a sort of great amount of time devoted to accommodating the vehicle, sort of time and space, if you like. And I think so, yes, but I think you're right. There are other drivers which are above that, which is, I think, is to do with sustainability. And we're trying to move towards a zero carbon world. We're trying to reduce, you know, air pollution. There is an equity story to this as well, whereas, you know, because not everybody has access to owning a car, not everybody is able to drive a car. So I think there is an opportunity in terms of equity in transportation that, you know, with the advent of AVs, perhaps, you know, something that's kind of age indifferent, has easy 24/7 usage accessibility, and perhaps can also cater, as we start to see in some places, to people with disabilities, people who might be mobility challenged. So I think there are a lot of things that can make a sort of more equitable city with the demise of the private vehicle. You know, there's also a whole other aspect which has to do with logistics. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of doing a downtown planning study for Boston. And in fact, of being sort of looking and saying, oh, can we make a greater area than just the immediate area around Downtown Crossing? Can we extend the pedestrian priority area? And it was something that we heard a lot from the public, with them sort of saying, you know, we want more areas devoted just to pedestrians. And of course, the servicing is where one gets in a lot of trouble. That and access to parking garages, which we hope eventually will disappear or be repurposed. So just, you know, being able to perhaps automate when those service vehicles are arriving. And, you know, it might be easier for an AV to be doing a delivery at 4 a.m. than some poor person that has to be keeping bizarre hours because you want to manage that servicing. There are a lot to be gained. And then in the end, there's the public realm, that area that is occupied by cars. I believe while we can't give it all over to pedestrian usage, a lot could be given over to pedestrians that's currently occupied by cars.
Someone else who believes in the importance of sustainable mobility when it comes to our future cities is Annika Miller, head of the FIA Innovation Fund. She discusses what sustainable mobility means for future cities, the influence COVID had on shared mobility, and the significance of multimodality and freedom of choice when it comes to transport options.
If we look at COVID and what COVID has done, we saw where transportation just sort of came to a halt. Mobility, as we knew it, everything stopped. And then with the restart, we saw people opt in for different forms of mobility. So I think the world over, we saw an increase in individual mobility, where the trend prior to COVID, there were suggestions and was always that we would see greater utilization of mass transit, shared mobility. And what we saw as a result of COVID was a shift, actually, a contraction of the desire of people to use shared mobility options and a preference, a clear preference for individual mobility. And I think one of the things that, one of the lessons that I think we've learned out of this is that that exercise of the preferences is so important. So individual mobility we've seen were bicycles, e-bikes, e-scooters. There's been an increased use of those. We're seeing where within the context in Europe, there was also the opportunity to widen lanes for bicycles. We launched a campaign called Share the Road, recognizing that the road users, the traditional road users for the drivers of cars, need to share the road with the cyclists, and the cyclists need to share the road with the cars. And so that, I think, itself is a reflection that things are changing in relation to our cities themselves. The cities, if I think about Paris as a city, Mayor Hidalgo has a very clear vision in relation to the city and how the city is changing, not just because of COVID, but taking into account the outlook and the trends for the future. And she's introduced 30-kilometer zones within Paris. So low-speed zones, which favor road safety, but it also has implications for movement within the city. As decisions are taken politically in terms of how we return to more livable cities, or in some instances not return, but create more livable cities, we're seeing increased pedestrianization, we're seeing increased use of multimodes, but where the sharing is more visible. So I think in terms of mobility and what we're seeing, the citizen comes first. It's very much now centered around the citizen and the citizen's demand for convenience, but for safety and for security. What we will need to strike is that balance in terms of the services and how we organize and facilitate them, as to whether the car plays a role in the cities of the future. And we believe that there is space for the car in the city of the future, because we, as I pointed out, individual mobility still has its place, still has a purpose. Mass transit still has a place and a purpose. Coupled with this, we also see the environmental considerations. And so there's a greater focus on noise pollution, on air pollution and the quality, air quality in cities. And so, again, I think those are big issues that are impacting the future of transportation and the future of mobility.
Do you see that these trends that started with COVID to move away from public transportation, do you think those are going to stick around?
Overall, I think individual mobility continues to be something that citizens want to enjoy the convenience of individual mobility.
They want both.
Precisely. I think the key message here is no solution is going to be so binary. It is either or. I think the and comes into it. And how do you then provide for and what are the sort of ratios that you're looking at in terms of the options available? But I also hasten to say, we have to be cautious about making predictions around mobility that cater to the lived experience in developed economies, in very big cities. Because even in the context of developed economies, outside of the big city or the mega city, the experience of mobility can be very different and the needs of the population are also different. I give you an example of a conversation I had fairly recently, and we were talking about how many young people generally, that young people are not necessarily opting to get a driver's license because shared mobility has become something that they're far more familiar with. It's very convenient. You can use an e-scooter to work. Or you can take some shared mobility option, a shared ride, and you don't have to actually take on the cost of owning a car, the maintenance, the insurance, etc. So there was an argument that we need to look at the future of the demand for driver's licenses. Now, perhaps in Europe, we would see that becoming more of an area for examination and to look at those options and how can we encourage young people to be able to get the skill of learning how to drive.
Ideally, there's nothing wrong with a car, of course. I mean, nowadays, people look down on cars because of sustainability, but assuming that a car is sustainable, assuming that you could eliminate congestion, assuming that you can combine cars with big cars, little cars, scooters, trains, you really want to look for that optimal combination.
Right. Multimodality, I think, becomes very much part of the solution for the future, offering a range of modal choices for the consumer. And you'll find that the choices that you use, it varies based on your age, based on your stage in life, based on your particular need at the point in time. So the different options that you might select for your mobility choice for the day itself can vary. Just going back to the point of the driver's license, whilst it might be less attractive for young people, let's say in Europe, potentially even in the US, depending on where you are again, because when we're talking about large geographical areas, we can't assume that the urban center is representative of the entire area. My colleague in New Zealand was sharing with me that it was very important for young people and remains very relevant for them to actually get a driver's license. So they'd see no decrease in the demand, but rather increased demand coming from young people for a driver's license. And part of that is linked in their environment because it's very important in getting a job. So it really isn't going to ever be one size that fits all. But yes, obviously in the context of broader global trends, I think the broader global trend that we're seeing is a demand for multimodal solutions.
It's interesting. And I know in my travels, I would always rent a car. And now, depending on how many places I have to go to, say I'm on a business trip, I'll almost always try and do it with Uber or Lyft or some shared mobility service. And in a way, I could see someone, a young person that doesn't have a driver's license or living in the city, say, well, why do I need a car? I got to pay for a parking spot. And I can have a car show up here, just pick up this app and I'm ready to go.
So that's the point that if it is that, especially if you're young and if you have no dependents, time is your own, shared mobility may very well be the best option for you if it is that you are in an urban environment. If you're that same young person and you're in a rural area, you're in a suburban area, and you want to be able to have that flexibility to move where the action is and then to go back to a more quiet neighborhood, then a shared mobility option might prove to be an expensive option. So if it is that you're going to use it very frequently. So what you want to really do is ultimately give people that freedom of choice so that they can make the best and informed decisions for what works for their life, in their lifestyle, and how they are organizing themselves. But another thing that I think would be important to put in the mix in the context of multimodality is also sustainable mobility. And just as you mentioned earlier, the importance in what all of these mobility options that are becoming available, and we're seeing where micromobility has sort of exploded in some areas. It's not necessarily in every part of the world, but in many parts of the world, we're seeing the e-scooters. Now there's a number of suppliers of e-bikes have indicated just a significant increase in volumes of their sales and the orders for e-bikes. When we look at all of these options, sustainable mobility has to play a part and continues to play a part. We're seeing where regulators are ensuring that the policy signals are in place in some areas. In others, the citizens are demanding more sustainable solutions. So from the standpoint of a supplier, and for entities like the automobile clubs, which are very consumer-centric, we are also being very strong advocates for sustainable mobility, but sustainable mobility that puts the consumer at the center.
Next, I spoke to Gernot Spiegelberg, who at the time worked in the Siemens Corporate Research Office in Germany. He headed the e-mobility and systems architecture department and had some expert insight on how mobility in the average city will look like in 20 years. He focused on greener spaces and less traffic and explains how accessibility to vehicles will change over time and why this will happen. Take a listen.
Gernot, the last time we talked to you, one of the most interesting things that you brought up was your vision for what cities are going to be like in the future. And you started to describe a city where certainly there's autonomous cars in it, but all the cars would be underground. And all the streets and everything that's on the surface could be converted to parks or trees. It sounded like this beautiful, environmentally friendly world that's, you know, free of the pollution that you get from cars and everything else, almost like a city that's a park. Can you take a step back and tell us a little bit of what do you think a city's going to look like in 30 or 40 or 50 years?
This is too far away because I can think about the next 20 years because this is a distance which I can oversee what can happen here. What I think is the cities have to be much greener than today, and the cities have to get rid of the enormous space for our traffic inside of cities. Have a view from the air when you touch down with an aircraft in Los Angeles, for example. It's a disaster what you can see there in traffic jam and traffic lines everywhere. It's so much filled with streets and lines. This should be over in the next, I think, 20, 30 years, because I think especially the parking places have to be thrown away by doing something like mobility as a service where cars are running, not cars are parking. And therefore, half of the traffic space we have today, we can get back for greener places or for other approach than we have today. The second is, I think we should not travel so much in the future than we do today. With new technologies in digitization and with connectivity we have today, we can do homework, we can go to places where we don't have to be in reality. We can do this by simulation, we can travel by sending information, not sending our body, and therefore we don't need so much travel place than we have today. I think the cities will get much greener than today. I think, as you mentioned before, some of these roads will be placed as subways. Something like this should be done. If we have the same mobility amount than today, we cannot decrease the traffic lines because the same mobility task needs the same travel place. We have to think regarding how can we change the way of moving we are doing today. How can we travel inside of cities? Do we have this over? Do we have this in underline? Or do we have this over the surface? What I don't really believe in is a lot of amount of air taxis in one city. This is a little bit like a movie for the future, like The Fifth Element. There are a lot of cars traveling around in several levels through these are not streets. These are air levels crossing between the buildings. I don't believe in such a disaster we will get in this. And I don't think with air taxis, we will have this in the future.
I think it's interesting, this idea of taking cars, be they shuttles or personal cars, whatever it might be, and putting them underground. Because if you put them underground, you don't have people crossing the streets, animals, dogs and cats, whatever it might be. That would also make the whole problem of trying to control and make autonomous cars safer a lot easier, don't you think?
Yes, I think with autonomous cars, we will get rid of a lot of disaster and traffic jam and so on. But there's another point. I think we can decrease the amount of traffic in cities a lot. Today, we have a lot of cars where only one single person is sitting in one car. And this increases the traffic a lot we have today. If you bundle people in one device and you organize the travel by a special service where you can bring several people together in one transportation device, it will decrease the amount of devices in our streets a lot.
Do you think that in order to reduce traffic, that maybe in the future there might be a charge that's based on how much space you actually take on a street per person, say, to move from one point to another?
Yes, you can do this by different prices. If you want to have more space, you have to pay a little bit more money for that. This is we have today. If you have your personal taxi, you have a little bit more space in the taxi, but you have to pay a little bit more price for this. But what I think is to decrease the traffic jam, you should move the travel amount or the number of people from the spots of traffic jam to the time where the traffic line is not so much used. And you can do this by a special transportation fee. The transportation fee is higher if the traffic jam is bigger, and the transportation fee is lower if the traffic jam is not there. This is the kind in Singapore the government is controlling the traffic.
You know, another topic that comes up when it comes to autonomous cars and connected cars is related to the accessibility of transportation. Transportation is really, really important. The more access you have to transportation, the easier it is to find a job, or the easier it might be to get to a place where you can get a good or a better education. Do you think that this technology can be used to somehow equalize or have better equality in how you can access transportation? So it's not just for those that can afford it the most, but it becomes something that more people can afford.
Yes, what we think is there is a special relationship. Today's cars in private ownership will be used only 5% of lifetime, and 95% they will stand still because they are not used. In future time, with autonomous cars, we will move more and more in the direction of affordable mobility on demand. This is a service where you can use a car which will be used by all passengers with a use time of 80% of lifetime. Therefore, the passenger transportation will be much cheaper than with today person or private possessed cars. And I think Therefore, it will be affordable for much more people than today. And what I think is, connected to your Outlook calendar, service provider will give you a special service which will service you exactly second-wise when you need this demand.
Lastly, I spoke with Alain Visser, CEO of Link & Co., that is looking to change the face of mobility and how we buy and own vehicles. Link & Co. has a sustainable business model that aims to flip the industry on its head by making mobility more flexible and hassle-free for everyone. I asked Alain to expand on how focusing on sustainability as a core value has shaped his company and, as it continues to grow, what its success will mean for future mobility in cities. Here's what he had to say.
I get a little bit upset when all the car manufacturers are now suddenly saying we're sustainable. Whereas, as I said, if your business model consists on selling as many as possible cars that are standing still for 96% of the time, you can be as electric as you want to be. It's not a sustainable business model. So I thought, let's do something that is more in touch with the consumer needs of today, which is not necessarily owning a car for a growing percentage, and something that at the same time is more sustainable, in which means that not only the product is more sustainable, but the usage of the product is more sustainable than just letting it hanging around for 96% of the time.
What you're describing is you want to own mobility. Because you're not, when your car is sitting there for 96% of the time, nothing is mobile. In fact, it's sitting there. That's the opposite of being mobile.
That's exactly right. And that goes hand in hand with another, I think, extremely interesting phenomena based on the research that we have done 7 years ago. And of course, we continue to update it, is that one of the most interesting trends that we see both in the US, in Europe, and in China is that people more and more spend more time on doing things rather than on buying things. So the ownership becomes less important. The experience becomes much more important. And you can just see it everywhere. Yoga, sports, trips, instead of just buying stuff. And of course, the more you're interested in the stuff, in the things you do, then rather than the things you own, you also start being more open to share the things you own because you don't care that much about it anymore. So we see a sharing community starting, but also a community, an organization, a society where people want to have experience. So we said, yeah, we have a cool car. Let's just not sell it. Let's use the car to offer an experience that is shareable rather than just sell the thing.
If we go ahead 20, 30 years from now, what innovations in the actual vehicles themselves, in the modes of transportation and how we experience it. Tell us your vision.
I think people will start buying less and less cars and use more and more cars. But the real game changer is going to be autonomous drive, which is not because people, as I said before, are then suddenly going to drive without hands, but it means that people will just use cars. And I think there's going to be times where our grandchildren will say, can you imagine for about 100 years, we let people drive these things? And there was about a million and more people who died in car accidents and nothing really happened. So I think autonomous drive is going to be the big change where people, instead of buying a car, leasing a car, renting a car, will have an app. And that app provides them the mobility service. And whenever they need a car, they get one. And it's, as I said, an Uber without a driver. And I believe that is going to be the big change. More and more people live in and around the cities. The volume car manufacturers, if I can say so, are going to be suppliers to these service companies that offer those app. And then I think there's going to be the premium brands, the Ferraris, the Porsche, the Lamborghinis, I like to call them toys for boys. I always compare with the expensive luxury watch industry, which has never bloomed as much as in the last decade, whereas nobody needs a watch because you have the microsecond on your smartphone. But it's kind of cool to wear a cool old or expensive watch, and it's a status symbol. And I think in 2050, it's going to be so cool to drive a petrol car with a V8 engine and really look for a petrol station, which will be very rare by then, and drive around with a lot of noise and smoke coming out. And that's going to be like the old watches today.
And so, that brings this expert episode to a close. We've heard how design and innovation will influence and shape mobility in the years to come. Even though our future is unclear and unpredictable, one thing we have control over is our vision and the decisions we make that helps us achieve it. A special thanks to all my guests for their expert insights on creating a bright future for our cities.